Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. It's Mike van der Voort, and it's Friday afternoon, November 10th, 2017, and we're doing the third and final show of a series of shows that I've been doing this week, kind of centering on Philadelphia and some work human experiences. And our guest today is Kelly Paulson. Kelly is a life coach. Kelly, welcome to Drive-Thru HR.
Thank you very much.
And I said life coach. I think I misspoke. It's actually career kick-ass coach. Kick-ass career coach. I'm stumbling. Kelly, the joys of live radio, as I told you when we talked yesterday. Kelly, introduce yourself to the drive-thru audience. Tell us who you are, where you're from, and what you do in a little bit more precise terms than what I just did.
Sure. Yeah. So as you mentioned, I'm a coach, so I'm a recently gone out on my own coach. I've been doing it as a side hustle for years while also living the dream of working in human resources, as many of us have. So I am based in Philadelphia. You mentioned that earlier as well. And I've born and raised in Philly, Philly girl at heart. So I've never really left. I've worked in nonprofit world, advertising world most recently, which is really where my heart belongs more often than not. And I work with people and the businesses who employ them who are miserable, who are feeling stuck, who are feeling frustrated in their careers. So, I don't think that that's okay. And I know that most people would agree with me, but don't necessarily take the action to make change. So I like to think of myself as that partner in crime to help people figure out the changes that they want to make and how to do them. Yes, I'm an ass kicker because sometimes that work is hard and people get scared and they don't want to make the changes. So they require a little bit of tough love during the course of the experience. So
yeah, so it sounds. I came on about 30 seconds before the show actually went live, so I'm still scrambling for emails. What's the name of your company?
It's me, Kelly Paulson LLC.
Okay, that's it. Okay, I didn't know if you had some cool branding name. Someone's dialing into my other line now, so it couldn't get much better today for the show. Listen, so you're born and raised in Philadelphia, and
yeah.
Sorry, I'm just every now and then things get hairy, and this is that moment. So you're born and raised in Philadelphia, and when you were HR practitioner, how did you get into HR, and what did you do before you became a kick-ass coach?
So I studied psychology in college, always fascinated by human beings and what makes them tick. I was also a double major English. And at first I wanted to be a psychologist. I ended up being a weird combination of my siblings. My sister has her PhD in psychology and my brother's an employment attorney. So I guess they rubbed off a little bit. So when I finished school, didn't know that I wanted to necessarily jump right into grad school, which to become a psychologist, many people do. So I started in HR and I started working at a social services agency, recruiting people to work with people with developmental disabilities. So started out primarily focusing on recruitment and throughout the years worked at different nonprofits. And during that time got more and more generalist focused experience. So I did some learning and development and then picked up some benefits and I had the fun opportunity to work at the Philadelphia Zoo for a few years mid-career, and that was really the game changer for me. I will be very honest that I was one of those folks who believed the stigma attached to human resources. I thought it was boring. I thought we were policy pushers. I bought into that nonsense, and luckily, when I was at the zoo, I worked for a man who showed me the way, and I thought, okay, if it can be done like this, then I can do it. I'm in. And after my time there, I found the world of advertising, which was awesome for me. You know, you get to work with people who are creative and driven and so excited about the work that they do every day. And the HR experience that I had, I was able to build the team in both organizations with which I worked. One was a place called Brownstein Group. The other was an agency called Allen & Garrettson. So I got to really push the envelope creatively, build from scratch and build my team, which was amazing. And Allen and Garrettson was when I started to do more and more coaching, not only within the organization, but externally. And though my heart started in HR and I believe in HR, once I started doing more and more of the coaching work, I knew that that was where I belonged in the long run. So I would do, up until this past summer, I was doing career coaching for individuals outside of the organization, life coaching for individuals inside of the organization, leadership coaching, and anything I could get my hands on, truly. And then this past summer, I went and made the leap to go out on my own. So September 1st was my last day at Allen & Garrettson. Though I love them dearly, I'm so psyched that I made the choice because it was definitely the right move.
So I talked with a mutual friend of ours a couple days ago, Carrie Bucci, and she talked about her recent, leap into the entrepreneurial side of HR. She talked a little bit about, some trepidation and all that kind of stuff, but you're a coach, so you're helping people. What was your experience like in terms of making that decision? Was it easy for you? Was it a clear path, or did it take some other stuff to get there?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say it was easy. The whole "you're a coach, so you should know what you're doing" kind of mentality. Like I said, I've been doing it on the side for a while, and a few things came into play simultaneously around the same time. So my boss was moving on from the organization, and I adored her and I loved working with her so much. So for me, it was what do I want to do with this? So let's look at this from a place of curiosity. Do I want to take her role? Do I want to, and I didn't, do I want to get to know a new boss and build that relationship and nurture? Do I want, where do I stand? And at the same time, I had more and more individual clients coming in, and I had to start turning them away because there just simply weren't enough hours in the day for me to do all of it well. I knew it was coming. I made the leap probably about a year sooner than I thought I would, but I believe in fate, and I believe that those things happen for a reason. So it was just a few things happening simultaneously. Now, I also made the decision probably right around WorkHuman and gave them 3-month notice. So I was there for a long transition time as well.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So tell me, I've actually never, 30 plus years in HR, and I've never actually worked with a coach. I know people who do, but I've never experienced it. So tell me what a coach does. I would tell you about myself just real quick. I'll give you just like two seconds. I'm much more conceptual than I am analytical. I like to do a lot of different things. I follow curiosity, right? So I'm not the financial side. I fit that myth of, I hate numbers for the HR person. I really like people, but I'm not necessarily a people person. I'm an introvert. So what do you do when you meet somebody how do you approach coaching with them? I guess I'm really curious about that.
Sure. Well, as a lot of HRs about, this all starts with relationships. So every client that approaches me is not necessarily my client, right? So every person that I talk to, you have to gel. There has to be some sort of, vibe between the two of you for it to be the most beneficial for everyone involved. And it's funny, I think earlier you said life coach, and they're like, well, no, career coach. Well, at the end of the day, coaching is coaching, right? So if I went through a program, right? And true coaching, you're there to be a partner to the person, to ask questions, to make observations, to provide tools for them to be able to explore whatever area of life it is that they're looking to explore. So you're really creating the space for them to make progress towards whatever it is. So if it's a career goal, a life goal, what have you. And, it's also the accountability component. So what some folks, I said earlier, there are some people who, just stay in their job for 5, 10, 15, 20 years being miserable because they don't see any other opportunity out there. So when I talk to someone who says, well, I hate my job, but there's nothing else I can do. My first question is, so what makes you say that? And, what are some things that you might be able to transfer the skills that you've had in these last 20 years into doing, right? It's just kind of creating the opportunity for them to explore it. Now, career coaching can be slightly different because there is a part of it, right? Like, obviously I have a network of people. If I can help them, or if I can look at their resume or look at their LinkedIn, there's a little more hands-on components that I can participate in, but there's also the value in working with someone who doesn't do anything that you've ever done, right? So I've done life coaching for people who, wanted to take the LSAT and go to law school. I've never done that. I'm not a specialist in that area. And there's also the value in someone having no clue, because all of my questions are genuinely, I don't know. I'm asking this from a place of curiosity and, you know, how do you do this? What would be the process for something like this? What might get in your way? So one of the best ways I've heard coaching described is, so sometimes people think, you know, it's therapy, which it's not. I didn't study that for a reason. But it's almost the idea of, you think of personal trainer versus physical therapist. So physical therapist, you're injured and you need to get back to, you know, health. And they're there to help you do that. Whereas a personal trainer, in theory, you know, you're healthy enough to progress forward and be pushed forward. And that's what the coach is there to do. So most of the people that I work with are already in a good spot. It's just, how do you push them forward towards whatever it is they're looking to do?
Mm-hmm. Is there, I'm sure there must be, I think of like career, you know, so there are people who specialize in writing resumes, right? They're really good at resumes and provide some advice, maybe about how to, I don't know, beef up your LinkedIn profile and all that kind of stuff. And that's like their niche, you know. Mm-hmm. I know a few people who are really great at that. And then there's somebody like doing, I think probably a more, sounds like to me like you're doing a more broad practice. And then I know there are some people that like specialize, like say, you know, I'm at this level of management and I want to be a CEO or something. Mm-hmm. So like, are there specialized, you know, a lot of specialization? Are you more of a generalist in the, I guess is what I'm trying to ask in a roundabout way.
Yeah, no. Well, there's absolutely. I mean, there's definitely specialists in every. I mean, they tell you to get as specific as possible. Like, I kid you not. I work with women between the ages of 20 and 25 who feel X, Y, and Z so that they can achieve this goal. Like, there are people that get very, very specific. I'm a bit of. Okay. I'm going slightly rogue in that, because the career coaching side of things for me, it's the people who are feeling stuck. My background is in advertising and marketing, so I tend to work with a lot of folks in that field because I know that field well, but I'm also open to working with individuals beyond that. So I have that area of specialty, but I also do coaching for organizations, and that is a program that I call Dream Navigator. If you've ever heard of the book Dream Manager by Matthew Kelly, so it's ultimately based on that. I read that book in probably 2008, and it changed the course of my life. And I implemented that program at my last two jobs, and at certain points had about 50, 75, sometimes close to 100 people that I would be coaching once a month on how to achieve their personal dreams and goals, because I truly believe that there's a very strong correlation between, you know, who we are outside of work and how we show up and how engaged and well-performing we are when we're there. So, you know, organizations who are willing to support people achieving their personal dreams and goals will benefit immensely from that in the long run, even if the goal is for them to leave the organization at some point. So I've got the career coaching side of things and then the dream navigator side of things, which is a little bit different than most coaches.
I think the dream navigator thing was what I was looking for when I asked what the name of your business was. We had some notes and I didn't. So it's a program you run as opposed to the name of your, the name of your company. Cool. And just, I guess in terms of other stuff, so this week, as I said, at the outset, I've been talking to people from Philly, which is a, you know, kind of a general theme. And then, about the Philly HR scene, and you had some involvement, I guess, with Disrupt HR Philly. You sent me a note that you could share the origin story. So, Carrie and John both talked about their experience at have you ever done a Disrupt talk or?
I have. Yeah.
Okay. So what was your topic?
Let's make people uncomfortable.
Okay. Awesome. That's a good topic. So tell us this secret origin story. I used to read comic books and that was like a big thing, right? The secret origin of Batman or whatever. So love to hear this about Disrupt HR Philly.
I'll try to make it as intriguing as possible. I don't know that it's Batman level, but I'll see what I can do. So it is actually intertwined a little bit with WorkHuman. So the first WorkHuman in Orlando 3 years ago at this point, when they started to not only invite clients, I went primarily to meet Laurie Rudiman because I was a fangirl and I still think she's the coolest, and she was going to be there. So I went and met her, and I met Jennifer McClure at the same event. And it was at that point that, again, after having met them and being inspired, really started following every move that they were making. And Jennifer, I saw, you know, all the disrupt. It was starting, like the movement was starting, and I was inspired. And it was, you know, in the back of my mind, and I think for a few months, it was like, do I do this? Do I not? Julie doesn't have it. Can I do this? I don't know. And a few things happened around the same time. One, I had a group of HR people. I organized drinks, and Carrie was one of those people. Talia was one of those people. We just, you know, a few folks that I had known and said, if I did this here, would anyone be interested? Like, what would that be cool? Would people come? And it was a resounding yes. And again, still on the fence, I had a conversation with a colleague of mine who said, I'm like, this is going to be a lot of work. And he said, I can't imagine something called Disrupt HR being started in Philadelphia. He's like, I don't think you would sleep at night if you weren't a part of it. And he was right. So it was at that point that I pulled in Michael Harden of Juno Search Partners, who is a great friend and an outstanding business person, and Carrie, who again you spoke to earlier, Mixtape Talent, phenomenal friend and great HR individual, and then my friend Kim Hughes as well. So it was putting that dream team together back in, I want to say, February of 2016, and then we launched our first event that May, and then next week, the 15th of November, is our fourth event. And it's right. been so it, phenomenal. It's crazy.
Yeah, Carrie and John said it's like 250 people are so attend everyone, and they generally sell out, which is
they
awesome.
They do. We're about 5 tickets away from that as of this morning.
The size of the events varies. I've been to one in Dallas. I've been to one in Atlanta. I've been to one in Cleveland. I spoke at one in Cleveland. I spoke at one in Dallas, and there were like 30 people in Dallas. And it seemed like 500 people in Cleveland. It probably wasn't that much, but it was a full house.
Right.
And it was a blast. But every one of them, I was supposed to go to Denver, and then I had to cancel. It was unfortunate. But I think they do pretty well, too. Every one of the events is really cool. John and I were talking about, actually, the speaking yesterday. And, you know, he said he speaks all the time. And I don't speak as often as I used to, but I still speak. I speak a fair amount. And it was probably the toughest presentation, you know, because I guess you have to be so precise, and you're under the clock for the whole 5 minutes. It's very, and if you miss a beat, you really have to have your, you know, you really have to be able to come back quickly. It was quite interesting. I had never done anything like that before when I did Cleveland, and it was very fun. I would recommend that people, you know, whether you're in Philadelphia or not, if you ever want to stretch, and this is a thing. I had a boss who, when I got hired by this one individual, he said, I want you to figure out how to hone your presentation skills. This, I guess he was coaching me in, you know, as an internal, and he said, I want you to figure out how to hone your presentation skills. And so I started speaking and, you know, sort of stumbled around for a while. And then, you know, it started doing these other kind of more focused talks, and it really makes a difference in your overall ability to be persuasive in an organization. And I know a lot of people say they're scared of public speaking. I was not crazy about it. I get stage fright every time I go up, but it's such a skill builder that I think that people take for, you know, some people just kind of face away from it, and others take it for granted. I don't know. Anyway, so that's a meander.
I'm curious, what was your topic?
So my topic was the NLRB, which is, I'm a labor relations nerd, and my topic was how the NLRB was, it was actually entitled Dear NLRB WTF, and it focused on the last couple of years. The NLRB has made a number of case decisions that basically, and we talked about this, that the word fuck was okay in the workplace. Basically, it was protected concerted activity. And there were a number of cases including where one guy posted on his Facebook page, and I won't F-bomb again, but, you know, he wrote, my supervisor, Bob, is an MFing MFer. F him and in the horse he rode in on. And then he wrote, go union. Anyway, the point was, you know, the NLRB is destroying the workplace in terms of, I guess, not etiquette, but just, you know, the kind of it being a place of normal conversation. And it was funny, but I F-bombed too many times in Cleveland that I had to have them pull the video. So
wow.
Yeah, I'm the only one probably in the history of disrupt HR who censored myself because of language. So there are too many potential outtakes. I didn't want to live with
that.
Right,
you don't want it floating out there. I hear you.
Exactly. So the other thing. Why is the shifting gears a little bit, but and we'll come back to our cumin. Why is the Philly HR scene? I told Carrie and John both. It seems to me like it's become very vibrant over the last couple of years. And I don't get up there that often, but I see a lot of stuff happening through my extended network. What's going on in Philly? John gave a pretty good explanation yesterday, but from your point of view, what's going on up there that is kind of making that place, at least in my opinion, take off?
Well, so you're going to get an incredibly biased, right? As I mentioned, never left,
well,
love
right.
it. But
home girl is fine, right?
So, it's hard to say because I think there are so many things going on simultaneously that are all supporting one another. And it's, you know, I can say from, you know, my recruiting days, which weren't that long ago, we are getting such an influx of people from New York and from other realms who realize how special Philadelphia is in that, you know, there's opportunity. It's fast paced, but it's not an overwhelming fast pace. It's a city that has character. It's a city that has charm. And there's, you know, the tech space is growing and growing, and there's just more and more opportunity for people in general. So I think that is part of it. I also think, you know, the HR in particular, I don't know if it's just Philadelphia. Maybe it's, you know, a little bit of everywhere and we're gravitating more towards it. But I think that I don't want to say the rise of social media, because at this point it's totally, you know, it's normal. It's not new. But so
right.
many of us have been able to connect and speak and share our ideas, supporting one another or, you know, thinking oppositionally and being able to connect on that front. I think just, you know, when you find the people that you can nerd out with on this stuff, it gets really exciting. Mm-hmm. And then you want to get together and talk more. You want to have that banter over Twitter or wherever the case may be. So I think that part of that is creating the environment where it's cool to do that. And Philadelphia has done a great job of, yes, let's have these conversations. Let's put it out there. And I don't think it's just in the HR space. It's just we're happy to take the spotlight when we can get it, for sure, because we know the impact that it has on businesses when done well and thoughtfully and strategically. And you mentioned many people who, you know, are examples of that, between Carrie and John and Kalia, of course, and many others.
I've been remiss this week. So like, you know, a few years ago, speaking of social media, just backstories for me real quick and shout outs, I guess. Lori Rudiman was, you know, one of the first HR bloggers, and I got involved in Twitter and Facebook and all this stuff back in 2007, 2008. You're the third person I've talked to from Philadelphia this week that said something, you know, some X happened and it changed my life. For me, social media was that thing. I used to go to conferences, you know, the SHRM events. I'm an introvert at heart. I didn't meet people. Lori was one of the first people I met. I met her in Orlando, in like 2008 at a Kennedy OnRec recruiting conference, because I got a free ticket to go in. I'm from a guy named Jason Davis, who's no longer active in HR, but he started recruiting blogs way back in the day, and he needed somebody to take photos for a recruiting blog. So I met Lori and Maren Hogan and George LaRocque, and a bunch of other people who, you know, lived and worked in spaces in HR that I didn't have much to do with, because I was just a generalist at that time. And it was a fantastic kind of an awakening. I was so passionate. I blogged, you know, every day for a year, yada, yada, yada. But in Philly, there Eric Meyer, who works at Dilworth Paxson, which I think Talia at Revzilla, they did something together just last week. I know I presented at Eric's office to some Philadelphia clients in about 5 years ago. And then another attorney that lives up that way, Jonathan Siegel, who does a lot of work with
her.
You know, I was thinking about all the people I know and then people that work within my own organization, that live up that way, I'm like, I could do like a month's worth of shows just from the Philadelphia area. It seems like it was really, and that brings me back to like you know, I don't know why it seems, and I guess you're right. I think there's a bigger picture. The economy's growing all over. Certainly Detroit, where I grew up, has its own kind of resurgence story. And there's all kinds of other cities that do. Pittsburgh, I visited there a year or so ago, was astonished at what a city it was. So it's not like Philadelphia is completely unique, but I guess I've just been fascinated because for some reason, over this last year or so, I've just seen like a lot of stuff coming out of the universities and, you know, from people that I know. And it's just, it stands out more than some other places for me. And I was really, when I started doing these shows, that was actually how I got on this whole, you know, thing, that and the work human experience. So anyway, now that you know how my brain meanders around, let's talk about work human. I was also at that one in Orlando in 2016. I got invited in kind of at the last minute. I attended it, but I wasn't really present because I had my own show that was in Orlando 5 days later. So I was kind of dropping in and out of sessions. And my experience, hey, this is pretty cool. You know, I don't have time to deal with it, but it's pretty cool. So I went back last year, you know, I went to Phoenix and paid my way in and went to the conference as an attendee, which I don't do that often. And that's where I met Carrie. And I mean, I knew John, you know, and some of the other people, but I mean, that's where I met Carrie and kind of, you know, got into this like new little tribe that was a really fun experience that really mirrored. And the reason I bring all that up again for the third time this week is it actually harkens back to some of those other events that were, you know, kind of life-changing for me in terms of social media and HR and being able to reach out into this extended universe. It's just, it's so powerful. And there are still HR people who don't adopt it. Not as much as they used to. They don't fight it, but there's still a lot of people. And they're, you know, I used to tell people, you have to be on Twitter. I was like, you know, I was, my hair stood up on end and you got to get on Twitter. And now I don't like Twitter as much as I used to, because it's not the water cooler that it used to be. It's more of a news thing for me. But anyway, let's talk about Work Human. You said you've been 3 years. I think we may have met for a second last year, or maybe not, because you said you were charging your battery, literally recharging your personal batteries at that event.
Yeah.
So
tell us
about your Work Human experience.
Sure. So as I mentioned earlier, I ended up going because of Laurie that first year in 2015. I think there were 2015 and 2016 were both in Orlando.
Really? Okay. Then I was there in 2016. So I didn't, okay. The first one I missed, I guess. Okay.
Yeah. And they were phenomenal. Now, I will be completely honest. I mean, I had never gone to another HR conference. And I think you've mentioned a few times, I very much am an introvert as well. So the larger conferences for me tend to suck the life out of me. So I think the first year it might have been maybe 500 or 600 people in Orlando. And then it's slowly grown and grown. I don't know how big it was last year. But so after the fact, I mean, I thought they just did a phenomenal job. Like Global Force, who puts the event on. It was just really thoughtful and strategic and just did it. And so many amazing speakers and keynotes and conversations. And, you know, I left my thing at those things is, you know, if I come out of it with one or two relationships that are new that feel like, solid, that's a win for me. You know, I have some Canadian friends that I met that year, one that I, you know, who knows that I ever would have crossed paths with these people prior. And it was so wonderful. And I feel like I came back and told everyone I know that they needed to attend. And then in the interim, I will be completely honest, Alan and Garrett then implemented one of their recognition tools. So I became a client of Global Force, who puts it all on. So had a great experience, you know, the thoughtful, strategic experience that I had at the event transferred and continued to live on with my relationship with them. And then 2016, I had the pleasure of being on their panel with these massive organizations. Now at A&G, we are under 200 employees all in. So I think it was like me and I can't remember at this point, maybe a hospital, like an airline. It was these huge organizations. And I'm talking about my experience with like 150 people or whatever it is. So it was a lot of fun. It was, you know, a great opportunity. But again, I do think, you know, they just do a solid job. And again, then it became, I do think you're one, what you were talking about moments ago, those people who I saw as quote HR famous and they're, you know, so cool. And like, you, they're people, right? Like they're just human beings that you meet at this event who are lovely and they're happy to continue to connect with you. So you know, obviously through Disrupt, Jennifer and I have, but Laurie hosted the first Disrupt in Philadelphia and we've connected from time to time since then. And so it's just so nice to see those people whose thought leadership you've read or you've participated in conversations with them online, but then to see them there. Sometimes it's that awkward, I'm guessing you've experienced it, where you know them in this like itty bitty profile picture. And you're like, I think that's so-and-so, and I need to go over and say, like, it's an awkward saying hi moment because I'm pretty sure it's them, but I'm not certain. And but it's just such a lovely group of people. And of course, it makes sense. Like, you put a bunch of HR people together, of course, we're going to, you know, interact and do well and be supportive of one another. But I do think it's a real game changer. And then last year, just to see it continue to grow and evolve, it was a much larger group. It was just so fun to get to see everyone. Now, I do... You know, you guys are probably all at the pool hanging out. And like I said, I was in the room hiding, taking a nap or doing whatever it is I do to get back there and function with a group. You know, still such a valuable experience. And it was so fun to even see the Philly people when you're walking around, like the people that you know that you do see all the time. But I was also there with my team at that point.
I didn't know that. So you're a client. Did you become a client because you met them? Right, I know. Yeah, not now, but you were.
Yeah.
Did you become a client because of going to that WorkHuman conference, or was that just something that would have developed? Okay, so literally you not only became a conference goer, but that you became a business lead that they converted from the conference, which is there's nothing wrong with that. That's why companies do user conferences. What I talked about with Carrie and John, though, is that user conference is so much more because they bring in like you did the panel and you talked about your experience with the company and how it benefited your organization. So they're not just up there, you know, trying to sell you, you know, showing you how to do software demos or trying to sell you. I mean, they bring in fantastic keynotes and all that kind of stuff. We've been through that already a couple of times, you know, the Adam Grants and the Michelle Obamas and Julia Louis-Dreyfuses of the world. But then they also do all these other sort of like smaller subject panels, and they have these short, it's hard to describe the event. I mean, there's giant conference room, you know, where you're literally like, you know, the whole front wall is a screen with multimedia presentations going on. And then maybe 20 minutes later, you might be out in a lobby watching a speaker give a 5-minute, not really a disrupt kind of speech, but like a 5-minute, 1-point, you know, discussion on a topic with 30 other people. So there's like these giant events or these giant moments. And then there's like these little intimate moments, and it's all kind of going on simultaneously. I plan a conference. You do Disrupt. I plan for my organization. I plan conferences twice a year. We get 350 people, and the amount of work we put into getting ready for 350 people, you know, nearly kills my 2-person organization. Global Forces budget and their staff is much bigger, but the amount of stuff they have moving at any given time, it just boggles my mind. And they do, a fantastic job with it. And now I'm fanboying over Global Force and WorkHuman.
Well, so funny that you mentioned that it's not a salesy thing, because when I was on the panel, like, he stopped me at one point. I was like, well, you guys do a great job. He's like, we're not asking you to say that. Like, literally shut me down. And I was like, okay, I won't say that. You know, like, they were very mindful of, we don't want the experience is about the movement and business is not about us as an organization, which then I was like, yep, I like you even more. Cool.
Did John mentioned that he had attended, or I guess he spoke at a WorkHuman regional event in Philly. Did you get a chance to attend that, or have you only been to the big events?
I did not go regional, though I will say Michael, who's one of the Disrupt founders as well, sent me a screenshot of me giving a quote at the local thing. I arrived on my phone and I said, where are you? What's happening? So I didn't realize it was happening. But good to know I was there in spirit somehow. I haven't attended any of the local. Yeah.
I was just curious. What that experience was like if you had gone. So, we're down to, let's see, I got my computer has blanked out. We're down. We've talked for about 35 minutes. Where do people find you? Like, you know, so you have a Dream Navigator as a program, and you have Kelly Paulson LLC. What is your website? Just your name? Are you on Twitter? Do you want to share that stuff?
Sure. Yeah. Website is kellypoulson.com. So KellyPoulson.com. I'm KPoulson28 on Twitter.
Okay.
Just my name on Facebook, just my name on LinkedIn, but I'm on all of those channels. I, like you, I think I'm not on Twitter as much as I once was these days. LinkedIn's more my jam, but you never know.
Why LinkedIn? Just out of curiosity. I like LinkedIn, but I have some ridiculous number of connections that do me no good, really.
Mm-hmm.
The massive number doesn't do me any good.
Right.
It is great to reach out and stuff, but what do you do there? Do you post? I mean, is it connecting? Do you publish there? What makes it?
I do publish.
Platform?
I write. So I write for a few different places, and then I write on LinkedIn. So I think for me, LinkedIn's where I write the stuff that I, So like for instance, I'm super into horror movies. So every year there's going to be some like Halloween leadership or hiring Halloween related post that's going to end up there. Like those goofy kind of things where I'm like, well, if you're connected with me, you kind of, hopefully you appreciate this stuff or don't read it. But also I will say recruiter roots, right? Like that was just such a fantastic tool for finding the right talent for positions when I was searching.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such a phenomenal tool for my clients now who are looking to make a career change. So I think that's why I spend so much of my time there for those reasons.
Yeah, that was actually my first exposure to social media. Some guy from Denmark and I were at a session that he was putting on in Kansas City for my employer. And he asked me, we were the only two people there from out of town. He was further away than I was. And he asked me if I was on LinkedIn. And my question was, what's that?
Mm-hmm.
And he sent me an invite. So that's literally the moment when I discovered, I mean, I had heard of Facebook, but I thought it was like a college kid thing. And,
right.
You know, and I found LinkedIn and I was like, oh my God, this is so cool. That's how I got so many useless followers. Cause I'd invite anybody. And, you know, it was like watching a stock market run up, you know,
right.
Oh, look, I got another acceptance. I don't know why I want to talk to a guy in Nicaragua, but there he is. Great.
Right.
You know,
hey,
it was just
never
silly
know.
Stuff. And then, but then, you know, later on, after I kind of explored it a little bit, you know, then it did turn into like, there was an HR space and, you know, there were some people like Lori and others and, you know, it really did make a huge difference. And so I'm always curious how people found their way, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I want to thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. I've got to make up a, we lost the show with Talia because of the ever problematic tech difficulties. Is there anything else you'd like to share just in kind of closure? I mean, you gave your details where people could find you. Anything else you want to tell people before we kind of close this thing out?
Well, if you are listening in the Philadelphia market or feel like traveling to the Philadelphia market, there's a handful of tickets left for Disrupt HR Philadelphia at World Cafe Live on November 15th. So we would happily see you there if that's your thing, which it should be.
It should be. I after this week, I might have flown up there, but I'll actually be in Washington, D.C. at other meetings that I was pre-scheduled.
Bummer. Well, we'll keep you posted on the spring one.
Yeah, I'll come to one next year. Yeah, I'll develop a new 5-minute speech and put in and see if I can become a speaker. Anyway,
I want to thank you.
Friday. It's Friday afternoon, and you know everybody. So the show. I don't even know if I told you this. The show will it'll populate in a minute on. With a link, I'll send it to you, and then you know you can post it or share it out on your social media or your LinkedIn page or whatever. And I will look forward to meeting you again in real life one of these days, either in Philadelphia or at a WorkHuman conference. All right, Kelly?
Same here, Michael. Thank you so much.
Have a great afternoon. I'm going to end
you
the
too.
Show now. Take care.
Okay.